Reyes-Pantoja against American NTN Bearing. Mr. Seller.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. In granting summary judgment for a defendant, a district court must conclude that there are no material facts in dispute and that the defendant is entitled to judgment as a matter of law. I do agree, by the way, with the Nice case and with what defendant said, that this court's role is to review the record de novo. And therefore, even though the district court might have made some errors of fact, they may be overlooked or reconsidered in a de novo review. But the district court did ignore a number of facts, as the defendant ignored several facts below and continues to do so, and seems to be arguing that whatever his witnesses said was the truth and whatever my witnesses said was false. And I think that in the Randolph case, this court said, then things can devolve into a swearing contest, and that's not appropriate for summary judgment.
But let's talk about this spill that was allegedly caused by Cusimano that resulted in the 2 inches of water. It's no dispute that the plaintiff never reported that spill to management, is it?
Cusimano did have a spill in June, June 24th, 25th. And another Hispanic employee by the name of Oscar Salazar was ordered by Mr. Cusimano to clean it up by himself, even though other employees said they would help.
But what I asked was, were supervisors aware of the spill? Was that reported?
Yes, that was because Mr. Salazar went to complain about how he was being treated, and then he got written up for that on June 24th and June 25th. By Mr. Cloyd, and that was approved by Mr. Dotka. Mr. Dotka did meet with Mr. Salazar on that day. I didn't say that there was a spill on those dates in my brief because I didn't put two and two together, but there was a spill that Mr. Cusimano caused on June 24th and 25th, which caused this problem with Mr. Salazar, where he was very curt with him in front of other employees. And when he complained, he was disciplined. In the time that I have, I would like to start with the retaliation claim, although I think a good number of facts which support the retaliation claim also support the other claims in this case.
Yeah, I'm glad you're doing that, because with particular reference to the retaliation claim, what would help me would be as clear a timeline as you can review from the record of when Mr. Pantoja made various complaints and when things happened, because the district court at least seemed to think that some of the warnings came prior to complaints, and you say no, that's wrong. But what's in the record?
Okay. What we know is that sometime in 2001 he complained to the head of HR, Mr. Moyer, about how he was being treated. There were two drafts of warnings in April of 2001, which were never given to Mr. Pantoja.
But that was what Pantoja says at some point, he says something like before or during 2001, he starts to complain. But what is it that nails down the time frame of those complaints to being before he starts getting these warnings?
With respect to those two complaints, we don't know, because we don't know when he complained to Mr. Moyer, though we know Mr. Moyer left in August of 2001. However, the thrust of the retaliation claim begins in 2002, after he was denied a promotion, after he spoke to Darlene Miles, who was the assistant HR director, after he complained about how Cusimano was treated. He then, days after that, because she testified, I believe it was late March, early April, was written up. It was an April 17th write-up, which, again, was never approved by HR and was in the file.
That's one of the ones he doesn't see until late May.
He didn't see until afterwards. Then there was this April 23rd write-up, which for some strange reason was not approved until about May 17th. It was not given to him until June 3rd about a spill that he caused, even though I think at the bottom of these warning notices it says that these things should be completed within 24 hours. Thereafter, there's a note that Mr. Maney writes to Mr. Cloyd when he's going on vacation saying, you better watch Pantoja, you know, keep a good eye on him. And then after that, in August, Ms. Miles was taking complaints from other Hispanics about Mr. Cloyd, and it was at the end of August when he was terminated. There was a write-up, which is very interesting. On August 1st, he was given a write-up for a spill by Mr. Cloyd, and he claims, and this is his testimony, and I believe him probably because he's my client, but I think he's an honest man, that he's saying, why am I being picked out? Why are you choosing me? That write-up disappeared. There is no write-up. However, in a later write-up that they drafted on the day that he was terminated, they note that there was a prior write-up on 8-1, but they don't produce it. They haven't produced that one. I think that that's the timing of the situation. I think that, again, also, he did...
Now, do you have evidence of retaliation apart from time sequence?
Well, I believe I do. I believe that the changing reasons that were given for the termination, they're all over the place. On the one hand, it was this incident on August 10th. Then it was insubordination. There's absolutely no evidence of that. There's absolutely no evidence of dishonesty. Mr. Dotka testified that he thought Pantoja was an honest man. And I would like to talk about the August 10th incident because I think that at least Mr. Dotka claims now that that was the sole reason why he was terminated, even though in answers to interrogatories and in an answer in a letter to EEOC they claimed otherwise.
This is going off to change Ms. Garcia's tire?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was working the week. What they did was these mechanics, and by the way, Cusumano was similarly situated to Pantoja. They rotated different sides of the plant and did the same thing. The only difference was that Mr. Cusumano made more money. And, you know, that's really the only difference. The other thing I just want to point out in my defense is that I had said that these skill checks that were part of a performance evaluation every year, and the testimony was that they were not part of the annual evaluations, but part of, I think, the promotion process. I have the documents here which show, number one, on the annual report, they do list the skill checks. And also, the skill checks determine whether you get promoted. You have to get a certain number of points to get promoted. And the other interesting thing is that they're supposed to do these skill checks every 3 months. And the last skill check they did was in September 2001, and he was denied the promotion in February of 2002. There was no skill check done. In fact, as far as I know, there was no skill check done in 2002 at all. Therefore, I think that Mr. Maney did say they're totally subjective. I mean, that cannot be denied. You had asked, Your Honor, for other evidence.
And that August 10th, he was the only mechanic on duty that
yes,
day,
right?
What, and he hadn't punched out.
He hadn't. What happened was he punched in at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. What mechanics do is they alternate weekends or every other weekend to go and just sort of check the machines for oil because the plant is sort of on semi-shutdown. It's just a maintenance job. They carry around a pager. So they're only there for 4 hours, but they're responsible for the plant for the entire weekend. So therefore, if something should come up, if there was an emergency, they're paged. So it wasn't like he walked out on something that was dangerous. He also testified that he tried to find his supervisor and couldn't. There's testimony that Ms. Garcia was supposed to work that morning. He went and picked her up, brought her back to the plant. Then she paged him and wanted him to help her call somebody. because the car was damaged, to have someone pick her up, and that's what he did. He did not punch in or punch out for the period of time when he went to help Ms. Garcia. Whoops, my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Kerr.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'd like to point out at the outset two transcription errors that have a bearing on the record. On page 40 of Appellee's brief at the bottom, the record citation should read record 24, paragraph 291, instead of 921. And then as to page 7, the discussion of Cloyd's testimony as to what advanced skills are required for an M4 mechanic, that citation should read 70 to 72 pages from his deposition, and pages 197 to 199, where Mr. Cloyd goes into great detail as to the advanced skill required to promotion to M4.
Mr. Curry,
yes.
I wanted to maybe pick a slight bone with you about one of your issues, because I think it may reflect a misunderstanding. On page 1, you phrase it toward the bottom of the page, is whether Pantoja's uncorroborated testimony or the uncorroborated testimony of biased co-employees is sufficient to warrant vacation of the summary judgment. My response would be, absolutely, it's sufficient. There's no corroboration requirement, and there's no requirement of being unbiased. The question is, do you have direct knowledge of the things you're talking about, and so on. So
the only corroboration requirement is in a treason case, which this is not.
Last we checked. So, I mean, this problem actually comes up here and there through your brief, because you criticize some of the people who testify, for example, Ms. Miles, on behalf of Mr. Pantoja, but as long as they're saying things, or Mr. Pantoja himself is saying things that he has personal knowledge of, it's really for a trier of fact to decide whether the kinds of impeachment points that you would like to make are persuasive or not.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is...
I would delete that altogether from future briefs.
Fine, Your Honor. What I'm trying to get at is the language in the Gustavich case from the circuit, which does indicate that uncorroborated testimony of the plaintiff poses problems for a plaintiff in resisting summary judgment.
No, we have tried to
get people to stop saying that.
Usually when that has been said, it's in circumstances where a plaintiff is saying something like, you know, I know Mr. X harbors ill will toward whatever, you know, toward Ewoks, and they don't know, you know, what's in Mr. X's mind. And so in that sense, it's not particularly useful testimony. But the mere fact that they don't have someone standing by their side corroborating is really not a problem.
Well, I think if you look at the gist of our argument, we really hang our hat on the fact that the lower court found was that there really is not even a scintilla of evidence out there that shows there is a discriminatory animus that outweighs discipline for these admitted infractions that were committed by the plaintiff.
Maybe
and I
you
think
should
that's
focus
key.
On the retaliation claim, which, I mean, I recognize everyone's preserving what they said in their brief, so I'm not assuming there's any waiver about that. But the retaliation claim, in the district court's opinion, there appear to be some misunderstandings about the retaliation claim. And your opponent also says that the stories have shifted all over the place about the reason Mr. Pantoja was actually dismissed as opposed to being disciplined for whatever went on or other measures.
Well, I think great care has to be taken in looking at the facts. I believe that the statement of material facts has to be examined very carefully, as well as the supporting documents and transcript testimony. And it'll show clearly that counsel is distorting what the evidence is as to what actually happened. As our statement of facts in the brief make it quite clear, in early 2001, there was discipline, an example of oral discipline written and put into Mr. Pantoja's record.
But does he know that? I mean, well
oral
and
discipline
besides,
is the
what
supervisor.
They're saying is they're focusing on 2002.
Well, oral discipline is the supervisor going to the employee and saying, you committed this infraction, this is an oral warning, make sure it doesn't happen again.
What about your opponent's point, though, that it's really the 2002 events? Nobody follows up in 2001. He says it's really 2002.
Then that eliminates 2001 from his claim of retaliation. And clearly the space of time.
He's not complaining about anything that happened in 2000. He's complaining that he was fired on August 30, 2002.
But what happened, the first thing that happened in 2002, which he claims was an instance of retaliation, was his performance review in February of 2002. So if there's nothing that preceded that, that performance review could not have been in retaliation to anything. So if he waives any claim, well, haven't really established anything before February 2002, then the first review, which made it clear that he was having trouble, now having achieved the M3 level, Mr. Pantoja was having difficulty meeting the best expectations for performance there.
But he no one gives him a warning until May 14, 2002. These things are floating around inside his record, but his testimony is that the first... He doesn't have any recollection of an April 17 warning. We have to accept his statement as true. He has no recollection of that. It's presented, you know, he gets a warning May 14, 2002. He gets another one in June. So that he does know about. And then he's fired almost immediately, 2 days after he files the EEOC complaint.
I don't think that's true. No, he was fired before he filed an EEOC complaint.
No, I don't think so.
If you're saying an actual written complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, no, he did not file that until September or October of 2002. That was not filed before he was fired. Also, he filed no written complaint of any sort, and there's no written documentation of any sort that he was making an EEO claim within the company before he was fired.
Maybe
and I counsel the court take great care in looking at appellant's statements of the facts because they're just clear distortions. I heard many more of them here today. He loops. Salazar was disciplined for not cleaning up some flood in a lunchroom or a recreation room at the plant. And because he wasn't doing it, the mechanics and the supervisors had to do that cleanup. And he was disciplined for violating a direct order to help in the cleanup, which is his job as a janitor. Now, that was not the same incident as he claims he saw a mechanic's overfill of a tank. That is a very different sort of thing than this lunchroom incident in which he got a discipline in July 2002. And I would also point out, when he complained about that to management, he put in writing his complaint about alleged abuse or mistreatment or harsh treatment, I shouldn't be treated this way. He doesn't say anything that I'm being treated this way because I'm Mexican. In fact, no one before Mr. Pantoja is fired brings that kind of complaint. It's nowhere in the record. Just generalized complaints that, well, I'm not getting paid as much as this fellow, or I'm being abused more than this fellow, that doesn't raise the level of indicating to management that there is actual race-based discrimination going on in the plant.
Or retaliatory. What I'm thinking about is the evidence from Mr. Cloyd's diary that he was told by Miles that Juan and Carlos are going to the EEOC and file a discrimination complaint. They hadn't done it yet, but
he acknowledges that's in there. That's in his diary.
That's in his diary. So, do you think that's not if that were true, and he were fired because they learned he was going to go to the EEOC? Surely that counts as retaliation.
Your Honor, that's his personal diary. There's no evidence that he disclosed that to anyone else.
But Miles
knew. But there's no evidence she disclosed that to anyone else. And the discipline had been put in the chain of operation beginning on August 12th, when another manager from another department came to Mr. Maney and said, hey, your employee was using our private office. The lights are out. He was in there with a coworker. Well, what's going on there? And that's when Mr. Maney, on August 12th, had an interview with Mr. Pantoja, and Mr. Pantoja admitted being away from the plant while he was on the clock. And that was being up in process. In fact, if you look at the dates of signature for warning report that is the foundation for his discharge, those dates predate this discussion noted between Miles and Cloyd about the discharge. Now, remember, Cloyd was on vacation on August 10th and August 12th, and he wasn't even around. He had no participation in the other than signing off on. In fact, I'm not so sure now I can provide the court with that. He may not have signed the termination EWR. But Mr. Datka did, the human resources manager, Mr. Maney, Mr. Cloyd's supervisor signed off. Obviously, he had the interview with Pantoja. And Mr. Yoshida, the engineering department manager, who has supervisory control over all of these folks.
Wasn't Cloyd present when Pantoja was told he was terminated?
Yes, he was present at the termination meeting, yes. And there's no evidence he said anything in that meeting. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.